Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me talking about Michigan's 29-7 win over Indiana. You know, Steve, you and I were joking before the show that it was almost maybe the most boring game. It was very much how it was expected. I think I said 31-10. I think you said 34-13. They continued to have some issues in the red zone. The run game was dominant again. The defense was pretty darn good. Maybe the best defensive performance of the season. You'd have to consider, you know, who they're playing and everything. But anyways, we're going to talk about what happened in the game in the first half of this episode. And then the second half, just kind of knowing where everyone's heads are at, we'll take a look at the rest of the season for the Wolverines, what sort of things still need to be cleaned up. We'll talk about college football playoff rankings and what we expect from Michigan the rest of the way. But first, talking about this game, Steve, I guess I'm not sure where to start. I mean, it wasn't a ton new. Anything really jump out to you as something that maybe didn't catch you by surprise, but you're suddenly paying a little bit more attention to after this game?
Maybe a couple little things. So first things first, I think for about a month now, I've been saying Hassan Haskins is Michigan's most important player, and he cemented that status to me yesterday. Blake Corum goes down. Haskins pretty much carried the team through the first half. And again, tone setter. You know, Michigan physically up front, beat Indiana at the line of scrimmage, and Haskins did a lot of the beating up himself. So, you know, can't understate how valuable he continues to be for Michigan. Yeah, I mean, I thought this game, like I think I said before, it was a culmination of everything that Michigan has been so far this year. Ran the ball effectively. Passing game was solid, but unspectacular, I think. Defense played very, very well. Red zone offense continues to be an issue. Special teams was awesome again. You know, Jake Moody, lights out, has 20 field goals now this year. And Brad Robbins continues to be one of the top punters in the country. So special teams was great. It's like it was everything that Michigan has really been to this point of the year. One thing I thought, just eyeball test watching the game, and a good thing for Michigan going forward, Taylor Upshaw looked like a totally different guy yesterday for them. Stats kind of back that up. I think he had one of the sacks. He had a couple quarterback hurries, a couple tackles for a loss. You know, you already have Hutchinson, you have Ojabo, you have Mike Morris has played a lot. You know, to have another guy at that spot who you can throw in there. I mean, any more depth at that spot is going to make life easier for Ojabo and Hutchinson for sure. So, you know, seeing Taylor Upshaw step up like that, get back healthy. He's been out the last couple weeks. And then also, and again, we'll see I know you got the grades and all that kind of stuff. I'm interested. I thought Michael Barrett was an asset for the most part yesterday. I know he hasn't played a ton. And I think Jim Harbaugh said after the game, he's kind of a chess piece they've been using, they use to eliminate the sub issue that they've been having. That's why he played so much yesterday compared to what he's played, you know, the really the whole season. You know, I thought overall, again, I haven't rewatched yet, but first glance is that he was mostly an asset for them yesterday. So, you know, he's a guy who has some starting experience and really, you know, maybe a nice little bump back up from him, you know, can help Michigan down the stretch. So yeah, overall though, it was a boring game. I feel bad for the fans. The telecast was absolutely horrible yesterday. I mean, the stuff with Fox, I think, has been an issue all season long, but I think it came to a head yesterday. I don't remember the exact sequence, but I feel like it was event as in like play or touchdown or penalty or something, commercial, play, commercial, injury, commercial, or something like that. I mean, it was outrageous and it was over the top. So, you know, I think that really, really can make the game more boring when you're watching it on TV, let alone me even being there live and there's stoppage after stoppage. You know, I think it really can kill kind of the momentum and the just sort of the gradual buildup throughout the game. So, you know, that's an off topic deal, but either way, that was something that I noticed yesterday that was, frankly, it was annoying, you know? So yeah, I don't like some stuff to take away out of this game, but I don't know, not a ton. You know, I think really it's the bigger question is, and we'll talk about it, the health stuff and, you know, where that is for Michigan going forward.
Yeah, I agree with you on Upshaw, by the way. He actually missed, I think he only technically missed one game, but his snap counts were down in the single digits, partly due to injury, partly due to, I mean, David Ajabo looked amazing again, just continues to be an absolute force. I think over the last five games, he has 7 sacks, 3 forced fumbles, 3 pass breakups, 21 quarterback pressures. I mean, those are All-American numbers if they're stretched out over the course of the whole season. So going to be fascinating to see how he finishes the year, because it just seems like each week he's either as good or better than he was the week before. He was Michigan's top graded player from this game by quite a wide margin, actually. But Upshaw as well, you know, he seems like whatever was bugging him earlier in the season, and part of it, I mean, his role was reduced because he lost his starting job, but yeah, you're absolutely right. He offered some really good depth. You know, I think it allows them to get a little creative, maybe in pass rushing situations. Is it a situation where does he get put on the NASCAR package a little bit, that third and long pass rushing group? So yeah. And then Michael Barrett, ironically, or similarly to Upshaw, lost his starting job. It kind of been forgotten about, I think. Maybe that's too far, but had not been a part of the discussion of Michigan's defense lately. But yeah, he comes in and has a nice game. You know, Junior Colson, career high 8 tackles as well, led the Wolverines in that regard. To me, most of it is just, it only further cements what Michigan is good at, especially on the defensive side of the ball. It seemed like there was good pressure. Less than 2, anytime you hold a team under 200 yards, which they hadn't done all year, you know, that's something. Obviously Indiana down to its third string quarterback. You know, they had a lot of injuries as well, maybe arguably more than Michigan did. I don't follow Indiana's injuries closely enough to know, but it seemed like both teams were the injury tent was at capacity much of the night. So, you know, with Upshaw, that's maybe one interesting development. I thought it was notable, Steve. I don't know about you. I mean, Cornelius Johnson getting a 100-yard game. He's been up and down all season. You know, he still is Michigan's leading wide receiver, but for him to have a 100-yard game, to me, that's the kind of stuff Michigan needed from this game. They needed guys who maybe have not had, because some players they're fully confident in, and they're you know, an Aiden Hutchinson type. But then there are some players who, now that they've got some confidence, they've built some momentum, you know, keeping an eye on next week's game at Penn State, which I would argue, I mean, you know, obviously the Ohio State game will be the most important, but this is a big one for Michigan, just in terms of, are they going to be top 10 all year, New Year's Six type team, or are they going to be, is this going to be another year where maybe they're on the outside looking in heading into that final week of the season? So I thought there were a lot of players who had what I would call confidence building games. And then the other thing, and we won't talk about the rankings and stuff just yet, but I think to me, you know, we can call it a boring game. That's what top 10 teams are supposed to do. You know, when they play the Indianas, the Northwesterns, you know, they didn't make it boring against Rutgers. And that was where everyone started to get a little frustrated about the team. So Yeah, I think for them to make it look boring, you know what? I think the one concern, and I want to ask you about it in just a moment, obviously, is the 3 points in the first quarter. They settled for field goals on three of their red zone trips. You know, so there's stuff to clean up, but ultimately they did make this look like a boring game. Is there anything else you saw that maybe is troublesome? Because, you know, we can talk about Michigan looking very good overall, but it was Indiana. Two of their final games this season are going to be much, much tougher. And Maryland technically beat Indiana as well, and that's on the road. Anything you're looking at that maybe is either a bigger concern than it was heading into the game, or is just still a lingering concern that Michigan has to clean up?
I don't think there's anything new necessarily. Like I said, I think the biggest negative takeaway out of this game is that it's sort of a lot of the same things with them that have been negative throughout the season kind of continued, particularly the red zone stuff. I will say, nice to see them get the tight ends involved in the passing game in the red zone. I thought, you talk about a guy stepping up in a big way that can pay dividends for them down the road, having Schoonmaker, two touchdown catches and really a foot away from three touchdown catches. One hands a ball that's thrown just out of bounds, you know, inside the pylon. That was maybe the best catch of the game. I know it didn't count, but that was a hell of an athletic effort by him. I think having him and we've seen what Eric All is capable of now, having both of those guys maybe playing their best football of their careers right now can be a big weapon for Michigan in the red zone. So that being said, yeah, I mean, more field goals, less touchdowns again. They say Michigan's second in the country in red zone field goals. I think this year they have 16 of them. I think Colorado State leads the country. It's a stat that it's not the worst thing in the world, because it means your field goal kicker's good and is hitting, but it's also indicative of some big picture problems. It cost them against Michigan State not scoring in the red zone, right? So otherwise, nothing really new. You know, I think, like I said, I think if anything, maybe it was just more of a continuation. You know, you look at a game like this, you go into the game, and you think, you know, we're three quarters of the way through the season. Maybe we'll start to see them round into form and correct it, and maybe, you know, get away from some of these bad habits or just things that haven't been working. And that, maybe if anything, we didn't really necessarily see that yesterday. It was a boring control. They controlled pretty much from beginning to end, you know, never a game that was in any kind of doubt, which, like you said, is always a great thing for teams this late in the season. Doesn't matter who you're playing, you know, so the positive there, but also, you know, nothing really great or no real signs coming out of this that are like, oh man, that's so huge for them going forward.
Yeah. The red zone really would be the only, other than obviously the injuries, but that's not like, you can't sit here and grade the fact that they had players endure injuries. Obviously that's a storyline to keep an eye on heading into the Penn State week. I mean, you know, Michigan was, as you mentioned, in such control. You don't know just how serious all those injuries are, but obviously it's a big deal when you have, I don't know, six two deep players, starters or heavy rotation guys leaving the game due to injury. So that's obviously one negative for Michigan to keep an eye on. But in terms of performance, yeah, it really is the red zone. At this point, they are now 88th in the country in red zone touchdown percentage, and they're scoring touchdowns on just 56% of those red zone appearances. And in conference play, it's even worse. I mean, they had some success against Western Michigan and Northern Illinois. They're 101st in conference red zone touchdown percentage at just 46.9%. So yeah, the percentage of times that they score is great. They're 42 for 45 this season, but yeah, being second in the country in red zone field goals is kind of a backhanded compliment a little bit. But shout out to Jake Moody, who has delivered. I mean, he's four field goals away from the school record, just the second kicker all time in Michigan history to kick 20 field goals in a season. Seems like 30 is within reach based on the percentage of, or the field goals per game that he has. All right. With that, with kind of the game, I mean, we'll have stories to kind of dissect and, you know, dig into the nitty gritty, but honestly, I think we covered the bases. I mean, as you mentioned, just not a game that a ton new surfaced from Michigan's performance. Plenty to like for the Wolverines defense, plenty to like for the offense. You mentioned Hassan Haskins, career high, 168 yards on 27 carries. Just looked it up, Steve. None for negative yards again. He had a few for zero. You know, it's not like every carry was bulldozing, but 168 yards, no negative carries. That's pretty impressive. We are going to take a break on the other side. We'll talk about where this Michigan team stacks up nationally and maybe what the final 3 weeks of the season look like for the Wolverines. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Thanks for waiting. So we mentioned, I think I said top 10 teams make these kind of games look boring. Not especially true yesterday. I mean, you look at some of the top 10 teams, obviously Michigan State lost, you know, they were playing Purdue, fell 40-29, but even the teams that won, it wasn't like this was not everyone was getting blowouts. Oregon beat Washington by 10 points and arguably was given that game just a little bit. I mean, I think they outplayed Washington for sure, but you know, Washington stepped on their own foot a few times. Alabama only beat LSU by 6 points. You know, Ohio State, Nebraska's played everybody close this year, but Ohio State with a 9-point win, scoring just 26 points against the Cornhuskers. You know, Cincinnati versus Tulsa. Sounds like Tulsa. I didn't watch the end, but sounds like based on what you've described, Tulsa very much in that game played very, very much like a team capable of beating Cincinnati. Wake Forest lost. So, Steve, with all of these scores, it seems like Michigan would be in line to move up. What do you think happens in terms of the college football playoff rankings now that Michigan has taken care of business against Indiana? Michigan State lost, so that makes Michigan's loss to Michigan State look worse, I suppose, but they are going to probably have another top 15 win because Wisconsin continues to roll against the easier part of its schedule. What stands out to you in terms of yesterday's results overall? And it sounds like you kind of, before the show, were making the case for Michigan to move up, not just one spot, but maybe a couple spots. How do you feel about Michigan standing in these college football playoff rankings moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think Michigan, based on just going off of how they ranked these teams in the first week, I think Michigan should be fifth in the next ranking. I'm not convinced they will be, but I think they should be. I think they should be ahead of Michigan State, which I'm just going to say it, so freaking predictable that was going to happen yesterday. Feel like you could have called that loss from a mile away, and just makes you shake your head even more at that. You know, what took place last weekend. You know, it's got to be kind of a bittersweet feeling for Michigan fans to give that game away last week and then see Michigan State be thoroughly outplayed throughout the game by Purdue. I don't remember what the final score, I think, was it 44-29 or four? Purdue was in control for like 90% of that game. So, which to Purdue's credit, they're solid. They're not a bad team at all. Like they are still in the in the fight in the West, but I guess technically literally like every team still is, I think. Either way, very predictable. Cincinnati, this is what happens when you're playing, when you're in the not in a Power Five conference. There's more pressure on you each week to dominate the lesser opponents that you're on your schedule. Tulsa literally fumbles the football going into the end zone to potentially tie the game. They'd had to score and get a 2-point conversion. But either way, to me, Cincinnati, you got to be more dominant than that week in and week out when you're not playing Power Five level teams. You know, that it's, you know, credit to Cincinnati, credit to Luke Fickell, but one win over Notre Dame to me does not, you know, should not just automatically slot you into the playoffs. So I think the question, like you, me and you talked about before, is maybe the committee keeps Cincinnati ahead of Michigan this week because they just don't want to listen to the outcry that would happen if they did it this early. Right. Maybe Michigan needs to go into Happy Valley and beat Penn State next week, but either, or even wait it out even longer. But if Michigan was to, right. But if Michigan is to run the table in the regular season, let's just put the championship talk aside. Let's just theoretically, if Michigan was to run the table, I'm sorry, but there's no way you can't put them ahead of Cincinnati, even with that difference and with the one loss versus no loss. To me, you just can't. So Oklahoma remains the wild card to me, because if Oklahoma runs the table, I think you're going to have a hard time keeping them out. Like, there's a lot of possibilities still. But I think I would have Michigan, based on the fact that they initially ranked Michigan seventh, I would have them fifth coming out of this weekend if I was on the committee. You know, I think you bump Michigan State down. I don't know how far you bump them down, but I think they do fall below Michigan. And then I think you bump Michigan ahead of Cincinnati. So, you know, because that's like my logic here is Michigan State obviously is going to get bumped down, but you can't, Cincinnati cannot move up based on that win. I think Michigan needs to jump both. You know, I don't think this is a situation where, you know, it just goes by loss and then you move a team down and everybody just automatically moves up a spot. I think it's a situation where I think Michigan should be ranked ahead of Cincinnati right now. You know, which to say, if you're listening, like if you would have said that Michigan would be fifth, sixth, whatever, heading into double digits dates in November, heading into Happy Valley as the fifth or sixth ranked team in the country in the playoff rankings, you would take it every single time. And I don't think anybody with any rationality predicted that heading into the season, you know? So yes, you don't want that one blemish on the record to beat a Michigan State. I realize if there's one team you could pick to not lose to, it'd probably be them. Maybe even over Ohio State, if we're being honest.
At this point, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't take away from where they're still at right now and what they have in front of them. So, you know, really still an exciting time right now for Michigan and the fans. So, yeah, fifth, sixth, seventh. The Bama thing, we could go on about that. They'll never get penalized the way other teams do. I mean, LSU stinks, 4-4. You know, not – that's a very unimpressive win for a team that already has a loss on their record. So that's a whole nother conversation, but overall, yeah, I think Michigan should move up too. Do I think they will? I'm not convinced, because I kind of agree with you with the PR side of things. You're essentially eliminating Cincinnati. If you bump Michigan over them right now, you're basically saying we're just waiting for other teams to hop them. But at the same time, you got to beat Tulsa by more than a yard. You know, because it's a 2-point conversion right away from tying that game. Who knows how that goes if it goes into overtime, you know, so that's where I'm at with it right now.
Yeah, I think you and I are on the same page about Cincinnati. I mean, they also struggled against Navy early, just a couple weeks ago. I think that they'll end up being ahead of Michigan still. And not undeservingly so. I mean, they are undefeated. I guess that is something. But you're absolutely right that, like, at least Alabama's sluggish, unimpressive victory was against a very talented team. You know, it's, you know, Tulsa is not LSU. Yeah, I'm with you. I kind of think Michigan will stay where they are. I think the committee, as of right now, is fine. You know, we saw last week they put Oregon ahead of Ohio State. I don't think anybody who's watched football this year that doesn't live in Oregon would bound the, you know, bang on the table saying Oregon's definitely a better football team than Ohio State, and their loss is worse. But, you know, the head to head was a big component. That was obviously something the committee was paying attention to. So I could see it happening again. Like maybe Michigan State is sixth and Michigan is seventh, and let them duke it out. Not against each other, but like, you know, Michigan, they both have to play Ohio State. They both have to play Penn State. So at the end of the day, you can just go with whichever team has the better record or has looked better. But for now, I'm curious if the committee keeps that head to head a priority. Just again, I don't know if they're doing this to avoid PR, but yeah, I mean, if Cincinnati's ranked seventh after one unimpressive performance, everyone from a group of five conference, you know, a lot of national writers are going to throw a big thing about it. And then if Michigan loses at Penn State, I mean, the playoff rankings are not meant to be predictors, but you know, if they're putting a team over an undefeated team, and then that team is looking unimpressive or losing even, then they start to get even more flack. So I could see them taking the wait and see approach on Michigan. In terms of the eye test, I mean, this is a very defining 3-game stretch for the Wolverines. I'm with you. I mean, they're 8-1. They're not 8-1 very often. They've done it 3 times under Jim Harbaugh, but before that, 2006 and I think 2004 were the only other times that they were 8-1 or 9-0 at this point in the year. So since 1997, I should say. So it's not, you know, they're in full contention. I think you could argue everything is in front of them. You know, we'll see how the standings continue to shake out, but it does seem like if Michigan can get past Penn State and avoid shenanigans at Maryland, they will go into that Michigan-Ohio State game with a chance to beat Ohio State and win the tiebreaker and win the Big Ten East. And that's, as you mentioned, that's exactly where Michigan should strive to be every year. You probably, if you're the Wolverines, aspirationally, you probably don't want to lose to your rival. You'd like to avoid a loss, period. But if everything is in front of you when you play Ohio State, to me, that is a season that went according to plan and met expectations. And obviously, fans will want Michigan to beat Ohio State, but that's statistics show that's not going to happen every year. And these days, it just doesn't seem to happen, period. So we'll see if this year looks different. I know you were saying before the show, Ohio State looks very human. I'm curious what your overall impression is of Michigan at this point. Are they a team that, I mean, every team can get better, but are they close to firing on all cylinders? I think the big question for me was, how does the passing game continue to evolve? They answered a lot of those questions last week. And I think this week, Cade McNamara, you know, I liked his performance. I think he was 10 for 8. I mean, he wasn't asked to do a ton, so that's part of it. But 10 for 8, 168 yards, 2 touchdowns. You mentioned Luke Schoonmaker having something of a breakout game. Cornelius Johnson having a 100-yard game, first one in a little while at least. How close is this team to maybe full speed in your mind? And is there something that's sticking out to you the rest of the way that they've really this week of practice, maybe it's circled 3 or 4 times on the to-do list, like figure this out. Steve, what are your thoughts? Is this team firing in all cylinders? Or is there still a ton of room to grow the rest of the way?
I think that's what's so interesting about this team is it does feel like there's still quite a bit of room for growth. I feel like their ceiling is higher than what they've shown. Health is going to play a role in that on the offensive side of the ball. You know, you talk about Ohio State. Yeah. I think if anything, the biggest thing in that game is the voodoo, the mental side for Michigan, because on paper or just when you've watched these two teams play, not against each other, but this season, you've watched both teams. There's zero doubt that Michigan would have a chance in that game. Like, I'm not saying I'd pick them right now, but Ohio State has looked beatable against any team with a pulse that they've played this year. The difference historically last however long is that normally Ohio State seems to, as good as they've been for how long, they seem to play their best regular season game of the year against Michigan. And for, I mean, while we're on the subject, feels like that's what Michigan State does as well. Honestly, it feels like both of their chief rivals seem to play seem to play their best game of the year against Michigan. Whereas Michigan, we've seen them fight and scrap in some instances, but we've also, I think more often than not, they look like a shell of themselves in those types of games. So I think the mental side for Michigan is big, because you watch the two teams, I don't think there's any doubt Michigan can get pressure on the quarterback. Nebraska got a great amount of pressure on Stroud yesterday. I have a bigger question for Michigan, and it is, to me, you know, everyone wants to talk about the way Ohio State is throwing the ball. It really is going to come down to Michigan winning the trenches in the middle and slowing down Travion Henderson. They didn't do it against Kenneth Walker. So, you know, it's going to be a tall task for sure. You know, it's always that game has almost always been decided at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. So, you know, we talk about Michigan's offensive line looked solid for the most part yesterday, gave up 3 sacks, doubled their season total. But I believe we said at least one of those was on McCarthy hanging onto the ball too long. Mm-hmm. There are areas. I still think, yeah, you want to see them build off of the passing game against Michigan State, but then you see Purdue throw for like 500 yards yesterday against Michigan State, and we might be able to just say, well, Michigan State's pass defense stinks. I mean, I think Purdue only ran the ball for like 50 yards yesterday and had no problem moving the ball the entire game. So, you know, the silver lining from yesterday, I say there's not anything big you could take out of it, but yeah, like you said, I think having two guys like Cornelius Johnson and Luke Schoonmaker step up is big, because we'll see where Andrell Anthony's at. We'll see where Blake Corum's at. I feel like Eric Aull will be back next week. I don't really think that's.
Yeah, if he's in uniform this week, I don't think that was smokescreen. Right. I think he's close.
Yeah. But you're building more confidence in guys that you can get the ball to down the field. So that will be one, you know, I think that's one positive to take out going forward, and with these other two teams, the two big teams remaining on the schedule. But it's hard to say. I think there is room for growth for them overall. It's just going to come down to trench play I think the ability to slow down the opposition's running game. Now, Penn State, maybe a little bit different. They have not run the ball that well this season. They are much more of a feed the ball to Jahan Dotson,
right,
and see what he can do type thing.
Hasn't been a terrible strategy.
No, I mean, what do you have?
Very 12, good.
12 for 200 and something and 2 touchdowns yesterday. I mean, the guy's amazing. You talk about, you know, there's a lot of really, really good receivers in the Big Ten this year. And I think, you know, all the talk about Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, I mean, Dotson's right there with those guys. David Bell for Purdue. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of really good pass catchers there. So, you know, might be a little bit different next week for Michigan, but on the other side of the ball, Penn State has been excellent in stopping the run, but gave up like almost 400 yards passing to Tagovailoa yesterday for Maryland. So could be a similar situation to Michigan State, where Michigan's going to have to throw the ball to win on the road, you know? So a little bit of a long-winded thing here, but really I do think the ceiling is there, because we've seen guys, we've seen flashes from a ton of different guys throughout the season. Can they kind of mesh it, put it all together, you know, for these big games coming down the stretch?
Yeah, I think the only thing I would add to what you've said is I think this will be, we really can't say how Michigan is in pass coverage. Or we can say, but it comes with a grain of salt. They really haven't faced any of the Big Ten's top passing teams. Now they're going to. You know, in terms of passing yards per game, the top four this season in the Big Ten are Ohio State, Purdue, Maryland, and Penn State. You know, you mentioned Dotson. Ohio State has tons of receivers. Maryland, I don't think, is necessarily a matchup that Michigan is in strong danger of losing, but it will be interesting to see how that position group continues to develop, because obviously the test against Ohio State, usually that game does come down to who's better in the trenches. But Ohio State does have the receiver talent to maybe, if they really can't get the run game going, maybe they can turn it on in the passing game. So I think that's still something. I think the jury is still maybe out. I don't take much away from the Indiana game in that regard, just because they were down to their third string quarterback. But there it's clearly progress from last season. It's just a matter of if there's enough progress to win. Because I do think if Michigan can make Dotson inefficient next week, I think Michigan will win pretty comfortably. I mean, you mentioned the run game. They are not a team that is two dimensional offensively this year. It really is, as you said, feeding Dotson, trying to sprinkle the pass game in here and there. So that's maybe the one area where if they're not clicking on all cylinders, that's maybe the one area that could help them get to that point. And then, yeah, the passing game, I mean, continued progress. They are going to need, especially against Ohio State, but also against Penn State, they are going to need very, very good games from Cade McNamara, seems like. I mean, I think the days, as much as we have applauded Hassan Haskins and Blake Corum, and they'll be, you know, especially, I mean, I don't know Corum's injury status, but especially Haskins, I mean, they'll make an impact in those games, but they probably are going to be games where they are good. It's kind of like Michigan State. Michigan needed Cade McNamara to play one of the best games of his career in order to be in position to win. They didn't win, but he delivered. Can't say, you know, 383 yards kind of speaks for itself a little bit. Yeah, that's probably a formula that's got to be a part of Michigan's equation moving forward. Steve, any other final thoughts, parting thoughts, takes, opinions stemming from this weekend for the Wolverines?
Not particularly. Like I said, I think the, if we're honest, I think really the biggest question for Michigan heading into Penn State, and we'll talk probably a little bit more about it as we know more, is the injury stuff. I think it could potentially make a big difference in this game for Michigan. Corum aside, I mean, well, what about Donovan Edwards too? You know, I mean, if you go into Happy Valley, and I mean, maybe we'll see what Tavier Dunlap can bring. I think he had a couple carries yesterday, but you're not, I just don't. So yesterday I tweeted during the game, Corum hurt, or Edwards out, Corum hurt, they need to throw the football. Not at all because Hassan Haskins is not up to the task, but not knowing where the health or what the depth chart is going to look like at running back, it is imperative that Michigan keep Hassan Haskins fresh. You know, that is now all of a sudden becomes one of the biggest priorities for them, is to not overutilize him. As much as it looks like he's always capable of doing so, you're still running a risk every time you give a guy, you know, more. And Michigan did a better job of it as the game continued. I mean, but after the first quarter, he had 10 carries, and I think he had about 14 or 15 halfway through the second quarter. I mean, he was on pace for 40 carries at one point. And making sure it's not going to be 100%. I don't anticipate all the guys that left the game yesterday are going to play next Saturday, just playing the law of averages here. But I think having some kind of Blake Corum back, I think Andrell Anthony is all of a sudden is quietly an important guy. I think they need to get him. He needs to be on the field for Michigan to be at optimal strength. And the other one that's kind of quietly, and this will be very interesting, AJ Henning leaves the game. Jamon Green leaves the game. DJ Turner is the guy they throw out there on punt return. If Jamon Green cannot go, do you really want your second corner as the guy taking your punt return? I thought it was very interesting that he's the guy they put out there instead of, like, say, Sainer still. You know, obviously Roman Wilson probably still not 100%. Otherwise, so I thought it was very interesting that DJ Turner, which, I mean, he had a great return, and he looks like a guy that could do things there. But that's quietly kind of an important one, because Green's, just on the surface level, Green's injury looked like it was the most serious. I don't know if it was a separated shoulder or, you know, what it was, some kind of situation. You know, DJ Turner is super important now. He's already important. We listed him as one of the most important players for Michigan in the second half. But if Green isn't able to go or isn't at 100%, I think you got to put someone else out there on punt return, you know, to make sure that you're lowering any risk of DJ Turner getting hurt too, or just overextending him at all. So you know, that's kind of what I'll be keeping an eye on in the week to see where Henning is at, because I think having him healthy and able to return, at least field the punt, is important for help keeping the defense fresh, or at least DJ Turner. So, you know, health is the big issue for them this week. If there was one really bad takeaway from the game yesterday, that's what it is. It's that they did not get out of it at 100%, and they actually have a handful of like relatively significant guys that are now questionable next week going into a game that if they win, it's almost, I mean, they should beat Maryland. And you're talking about, you know, what you want to be talking about as a Michigan fan, and that is playing for the Big East Championship against Ohio State in a very potentially playoff berth, you know, which is when you're Michigan and you wake up at the beginning of the season, that's what you want. Next week's game is really the final biggest hurdle for them to get there. So, you know, health is going to be really, really big for them, I feel like.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a good point about the punt returns. I mean, Turner, I actually liked how he looked back there, but is that optimal for Michigan? Especially, I just mentioned the pass coverage down the stretch is going to be tested. You know, is that who you want back there, especially if Green ends up missing a game or two? But yeah, obviously the injuries, will continue to have updates over at Michigan.247sports.com, the Michigan Insider.com. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Be sure to subscribe to all of our podcasts or listen to the recruiting ones and the basketball ones as well. Everything is starting to heat up here over at the Michigan Insider. So be sure to follow along and continue listening. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. We'll see you next time.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.